Welcome to Vantage Radio. Vantage is a storytelling company. Story is a language everyone speaks, and we believe the most powerful stories are found in the Bible. Meet our cast and crew and see what goes on behind the scenes of the stories we tell. We hope you get a bigger picture of the story God is telling and where you fit into it. Enter the pages of Scripture and experience the other side of the story.
Welcome back. This is Andrew Branham, and I'll be your tour guide through the sound waves today. To your left, we have Kyler Darren, our composer.
Hello.
And to your right, we are joined by Joshua Branham this evening.
What's up?
This is the first time we've had Josh on one of our episodes. Not that we have a whole lot of episodes that we've done at this point. But Josh, why don't you tell us a bit more about yourself and what you do?
So, my name's Josh.
Hi, nice to meet you.
We met at birth, actually. Nice. I'm Andrew's brother. I am the lead pastor of Hill City Church in the North End. I grew up in Fairbanks, Alaska. Was born in Australia, actually. Got that dual citizenship going on.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Got two daughters, two dogs.
Two wives.
One wife. And what else you want to know?
Maybe tell us a bit about how you're involved with Vantage. What's your role on this team look like?
Yeah, so up to this point, really, it's been providing some of the writing and kind of historical context and content. For some of the projects at this point, I imagine there may be some more of that in the future, but just have a background in preaching, have a preaching degree from Boise Bible College, master's degree from Grand Canyon Theological Seminary, and have just through the years in Bible teaching have just done some, you know, what they call first person narrative sermons. And so that's where instead of just reading a Bible passage and explaining and talking about it, you actually pretend you are the Bible character. And so I've done some of those myself, and also written some for other people to perform as well. So it's a little bit more like a monologue or like acting.
I think one thing that our listeners really want to know is, who is the older and therefore better brother?
Whoa. Oh my. You know, there's probably a tipping point where it's no longer the better to be the older brother.
Exactly.
It's definitely a question that we get a lot. Honestly, most people don't figure out that we're brothers right away.
Yeah, from the same mother.
We share blood. And I'm curious if the audience could guess based on the sound of our voices.
Does it sound like I have more facial hair?
Yeah, what picture comes to mind when you hear my silky, smooth tones?
I'm always surprised when I see a picture of someone I've only ever listened
to. Yeah, it's bizarre. Right?
Sometimes you just, you get this idea in your head, and then they're hideous.
you're just like, man, I never imagined that the sound of your trachea would turn into that image.
Especially with bands that you like.
Yep.
Yeah.
Classic.
I think Coldplay really surprised me.
Really?
The guy has such a deep voice.
Chris Martin?
Yeah, I did. I don't know. He looks so different to me when I saw him for the first time. Anyways, can you insert a little drum roll track here for us for the grand reveal? The winner is me. I'm actually just a couple years older than
just
Josh.
By 3 minutes.
Just we're twins. Josh actually is usually the one who people assume is older, probably because
of all my gray hair.
Because there's a little mental image for you guys.
People will think I am just like a hermit.
Josh and I have we work together at Hill City Church, and we've actually been working together and playing together for years. Josh was one of my very best friends, truthfully, maybe my only friend as a kid.
You had those imaginary ones too, though.
They were the same ones. They were shared imaginary friends.
You introduced me to them. So.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I made the connection there. but yeah, we've been in each other's lives, I guess, as long as we've been alive. And one thing we have had in common since we were younger is we've always loved a good story. Whether it was in the video games we played or the cartoons we watched on Saturday mornings or the books that we read, we always love good storytelling. So I'd love to hear just from the group, what are some of your guys' favorite stories?
When I was a kid, I was a Nate the Great fan.
Ooh, yes. Hmm. The pancake detective.
Child detective. He solves mysteries and eats pancakes.
That's true. Also, the Boxcar Children.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know if you guys ever read those ones.
I was a Magic Treehouse fan.
Those are pretty classic.
Mary Pope Osborne. She knows.
Whoa. Remember the author?
Oh, yeah. I read like 30 or something of those.
Dang. I was like more in the series of unfortunate events.
Okay.
Realm. All right.
That's a bit darker, isn't it?
Yes.
You are kind of a dark and brooding type character.
I do enjoy those stories. Some brooding. For sure. Oh, yeah. There's something.
Is there a lot in that series? Is there like Boxcar Children had like 200 books.
Series of Unfortunate Events, I think it was like I wanted 12 to 16.
Whoa, that's pretty good.
Probably. I mean, nothing crazy, but it had a consistent story throughout. Well, I feel like there are some others that you can kind of one shot.
Josh, I know you mentioned your prestigious training in the word, but I think it would be apt for you to also mention that you were, in fact, a part of Battle of the Books.
Oh, yeah. I was a Battle of the Books champion.
What is Battle? What is Battle of the Books?
So my introduction into Battle of the Books was not having any friends at recess. And so there was this recess club. You could actually skip going out and playing with all the other children in elementary school. And you would go to the library, and it was literally a list of books every year. You had to read them all, and then they would quiz you on, like, quotes from the book, and you'd have to say the book title and the author. So I was like a third grader. I started doing Battle of the Books and would read all these books numerous times, and you'd have to answer, like, trivia facts about these books.
What's one of the, just throw out a couple of books on your
list. One I remember was The Reluctant Dragon. Whoa. That was like, I think it was a shorter book. There was one year a Magic Treehouse book was on the list, and I was like, oh, I've already read that one multiple times.
It's kind of like a guaranteed friends. So you're like,
well, it wow. was like,
you can't be excluded on the.
Well, you had
playground.
To be on a team, though. You had to be on a team. And I remember showing up as the new kid to Battle of the Books, and no one wanted to take me onto their
you
team.
You get picked last for book club.
And then the librarian, like, made this group, like, you have to take Josh on your team, and it was these two girls. And then I ended up, like, helping them win the school Battle of the Books competition.
Full story, so, full circle.
It's a classic, like, Mighty Ducks tale, you know?
If anyone wants to purchase the movie rights to that story...
They should.
They can contact my agent.
That maybe is one of the future stories we'll tell. Well, yeah, we all love different stories, and stories are powerful. We've probably all had that experience where you're sitting in a movie theater as the credits roll, and you can't believe what you just saw. You have so much running through your head, or maybe you've even like broke down crying while reading a book before. But stories have a lot of power. People have been telling stories since they figured out how to communicate, from cave paintings to parchment. We use words and pictures to share ideas and experiences. When missionaries make contact with remote people groups and tribes that don't have a written language yet, one of the first things that they do is start acting out the story of Scripture, because story is a language everyone speaks. We are drawn to and shaped by stories every single day. But not all stories are cut from the same cloth. Not all movies cause us to rethink our lives. Not all books bring us to tears. So what And your guys' experience and opinion makes a story powerful.
I think I'm going to have to touch on, we said dark and brooding before, yes. So I'm going to kind of go down that rabbit hole a little bit, but I want to talk about Stephen King's The Shining a little bit. And I think when The Shining's mentioned, most people imagine the movie, right? You see, exactly.
A blood.
Yeah, you see like the axe coming through the bathroom door. Yeah. Here's Johnny. But in reality, like that whole book is about alcoholism. This battle that the main character has with this intimate experience with addiction. It's told in a such a way that like the book doesn't come out right and say that necessarily, and maybe it implies it pretty heavily, but like his fears and experiences start manifesting themselves in like a very supernatural way. And you see this, his pain and kind of the enemy that he sees like overtake him. And eventually it's like his son who overcomes his father's addiction for him. And so I think that what makes a story powerful is characters that you're able to see their perspective, and sometimes maybe not even initially, but like over time, maybe you see someone and there's a shock value of like, how did this person become this way? I can't relate to them at all.
Yeah.
And then pieces of their story begin to unfold, and mm-hmm. you're like, oh, actually, if I was in this person's shoes, maybe I'd make the exact same choices that they did. And I think that empathy is what really draws a reader in. You need a piece of art that I think you can see yourself in. And sometimes it's in the opposite way, where you so clearly don't see yourself in something, mm-hmm. like the opposite of you, that it shows you something about yourself too, like a villain or...
Yeah.
But I do think it has to be a little bit human. I just read a book called The Foundation. The first part of the book is all about this one man's experience where he is traveling to this planet called Trantor, and he's so excited to see the planet. He's like, I've never been here. He has all this anticipation. And when he arrives on Trantor, he just gets hit by this wave of monotony of like the person at the counter doesn't even look up at him as he's entering, which is like a feeling that we as an audience member can identify with, where, you know, like this, maybe it's like a movie you're so excited to see and the person at the counter like isn't even there or some kind of experience like that.
Show up at a theme park and it's like business as usual, but best day of your life.
Exactly. But you're like so excited. And so that part of the story was just like so enthralling to me, because I don't know what it's like to try and visit another planet, but I know what it's like to stand in a line,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so,
and have anticipation
and have the disappointment of that too. Mm-hmm. So I think it's taking those human elements that we all share and maybe imposing them on different context and situations that make them really impactful.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, I would say something similar with that relatability. You know, it's just this idea of you can see yourself in the story. Some of the greatest characters that have ever been invented have been the author just writing about themselves. And so you have Stan Lee created Spider-Man because he wanted kind of an average superhero,
yeah,
that his, you know, he wasn't a billionaire Bruce Wayne, he wasn't a, you know, a Tony Stark, he was just like a kid who got picked on, and everyone can relate to like, oh man, I don't feel like I'm very cool, or I don't, you know, I feel like I'm a misfit. And Charles Schultz made Charlie Brown after his childhood being you know, like a kid. Or even like you were saying, Kyler, the opposite, Ian Fleming wrote James Bond to be like the opposite of him. Like, you know, he's like this, you know, super spy ladies man, and Ian Fleming was just like,
not
I,
that.
I kind of wish I was better, you know, or like, yeah, I imagine him really awkward or whatever. But yeah, for me, it's got to be relatable. It's got to be like you can see yourself in the story. And another thing, I was trying to think about that, you know, as you were sharing, what's the first book that moved me?
Mm-hmm.
And it was when I was really young. I read a book. I don't quite remember. I was pretty young. It wasn't a Battle of the Books book. It was just a random pick.
The Reluctant Dragon.
It was The Reluctant Dragon.
Clearly stuck with you. Yeah. So.
And it's called like Children of the Wolf or Child of the Wolf or something. And it was like, I think it took place in India. And it was like this baby, you know, got left in the woods and got raised by wolves. And then it was about his introduction back into society.
Mm.
He got found. But he was... like the end of the book, essentially, I don't even know the book's name, so I'm not spoiling anything. If you find this book, let me know. Was he just gets reintroduced in society, but basically, they, you know, what they can offer him as far as like proper hygiene and health and food and stuff, they end up like really mistreating him the rest of his life because he's so different and, you know, all this stuff. And I remember just reading this chat, like the book ends really somber like that. And that was the first time I was like, as a kid, a little kid, you know, I just learned how to read chapter books and I'm reading this book and I'm weeping in my bed. And I remember thinking like, this is a horrible book. And sometimes just a story that moves you, even if it moves you to a place you're not comfortable going, I think that to me makes a story really compelling. And, you know, the movie 500 Days of Summer is like that, if you've ever seen that movie, where it ends and you're just kind of like, I'm not very happy or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's a very relatable, and it took you, it like took you on an emotional journey. I think that's an important thing about a story too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you know me, I'm a diehard ringer. I love the Lord of the Rings. I love the books. I love the movies. I love Elijah Wood, even though he's been in like some pretty weird stuff since then. But like Aragorn was my desktop wallpaper for 5 years when those films were coming out. I've been to New Zealand 3 times now, hunting down different film locations. It's one of my favorite stories. And I think it's because when I first read those books, I think it was the first time that a story created a world and invited me into it, and it felt real. And even though Tolkien is writing fantasy, it doesn't feel like fantasy when you're reading it. It feels like you could actually walk into Middle Earth. You could go to the Green Dragon. You could walk through Hobbiton. You could see these different characters in this world. And that's because he was obsessed with detail. He wasn't content just creating a world. He wanted to fill it with different kinds of people and cultures that had histories and actual written languages. And I'm not so obsessed that I've like learned Elven. I didn't do my wedding vows in like Orcish or anything. The thing I loved about those stories is it felt like I got to be inside of them. Like I got to live in them. And on top of that, one of the things that, you know, you talk about these relatable characters, Josh, I mean, Lord of the Rings is filled with like, is driven by these underdogs. Like of all the different races that Tolkien creates, he chooses like the most like fragile little people group, hobbits, mm-hmm. to like save the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a quote in Fellowship of the Ring where he says, even the smallest person can change the course of the future. And I think that when I read that, I remember thinking, this book's for me. Like, this story's for me. And I think we all want that. We all, like, feel like we're meant for a bigger story than sometimes our lives seem to offer us.
Another elementary school flashback. I played Bilbo Baggins in our sixth grade class play.
Fascinating.
You can look me up on
IMDb. Fifth grade.
Mr. Reagan's class. It's on VHS awesome. Somewhere.
Yeah, for me, it's if you can bring a world to life and you can help someone see themselves in it, you can tell a fantastic story. And that's really what we are in the business of doing. We just released Rahab. I hope you guys have seen that. You can check that out on our YouTube. There's links available through our Instagram and Facebook. And the project we're currently working on right now is Saul's conversion story. And this has been, not that we've done a lot of projects, but this has been one of my favorite projects, one of my favorite video passion projects that I've ever worked on. I've already seen God work in so many ways throughout this project. In fact, when we were just scouting out film locations, when we hadn't filmed anything yet, we were checking out different theaters, and we walked into this old abandoned movie theater. This place is like 150 years old, and literally, like, spray painted on the wall in huge graffiti letters was the final line from the Saw script. And I remember reading, just open your eyes, which is the final thing that's written in the monologue, and thinking, this is it. Like, not only is this the place we have to film this, but, like, to me, that was God saying, I'm involved, I want you to tell this story, and I want you to tell it here. It's a powerful story, and we cannot wait to share it with you. So, coming soon. But Kyler, you've gotten to see more of Saul's story than anyone at this point, because we are in the process of creating the score, which means you get to watch me perform Saul over and over and over for you. So I'd love to hear kind of like how that story, how it's hit you, and even just what that process in creating the score has been like.
I think it's definitely been a challenging one, just because it's so wildly different in tone, I think, especially in comparison to Rahab. Of course, with Rahab, you have this change of perspective that goes from kind of dangerous to hopeful. And with Saul, you basically have like malicious, like angry, kind of like very violent personality and tonality that, you know, transforms in just kind of a much different way. And so the first half of the Saul project, where Saul's just, you know, expressing all of his anger and hatred and kind of the futility of his fight against Jesus. The process for creating the score is a little bit unnerving. There's a lot of dissonance and things that are intentionally fighting each other. Even a very musical sense, a lot of chords that don't belong together that are trying to achieve a very specific idea. And what's been really fun is just to, in the same way that we did so in Rahab, going scene by scene and kind of playing along with the score as it develops, as the monologue is kind of being recited, there's this growth that happens, and these different peaks and valleys in the story, and so the score gets to follow that a little bit. But more than anything, I think there's almost like a nervousness for its reception, because it does go so dark, and I feel like particularly in Christian media, you may not see that side, that real side of the human spirit portrayed in that way, just because it is very violent and malicious. There's a lot of darkness in that character. Yeah. And so
watching you edit some of those sounds, like with your distortion, like way up high, it doesn't sound or feel like something you typically see in like a church service.
Definitely not. And I think that's very intentional, and we're able to communicate something, I think, really meaningful through that. But at the same time, you know, you just kind of sitting in that and then walking away after working in that space for like 4 hours, you're just kind of like,
okay,
oh man, you feel moved by it. Yeah. Certainly, like Josh, you said, there's I think worth to being moved by something, even if it's uncomfortable. But that's definitely, I think, been the case in exploring at least the first half of this story, just because it is unnerving, and we kind of want to create that dissonance in the process of the video.
Yeah, I honestly, from the first time you texted me over a sample clip of what you were coming up with for Saul, it was so complex. There were so many different layers to it, and it felt like, almost like you're saying, there were like sounds that were at war with each other, which I feel like perfectly captures the personality of this character that we're portraying in Saul's conversion story. It's a man really at war within himself. There's these two. There's Saul, and then there's Paul. And in this story, we have to tell the story of Saul and the story of Paul. We have to introduce him on both sides of this encounter he has with the resurrected Jesus. And I feel like what you've come up with so perfectly through music takes a listener on that journey.
If you can't tell by now, we love stories. That's why we're in the storytelling business. We would love to hear what stories have had the greatest impact on you. Think about movies you couldn't stop thinking about long after the credits rolled, or books and video games that brought you to tears. Consider what it was about those stories that moved you. What made them so powerful? Leave us your top story recommendations in the comments below, and we'll be sure to check them out and potentially even discuss them in future episodes. Thanks so much for tuning in.